Welcome to the Tea Grannies. I'm Elise.
And I'm Mariah. Today we're here to chat about fantasy romance. So pour yourself a cup of tea and let's get started. It's funny, like, I like having guests on the show, but yeah. I also like it when we're left to go rogue.
to go rogue. And to be fair, like, this is how the first two seasons, it was all this, right?
It's just us.
Right?
Just giving it.
And that's where we started and people started listening, so.
So, it's okay. They always seem like listening to us.
They like
go
us.
Go off.
They like us when we're idiots and they like us when we're not.
I like it.
So.
Yeah. Yes. We're relatable idiots. Like, we're not too dumb. You know?
I was speaking for myself, but okay.
Well, I mean, I do a lot of dumb things.
Do-do.
We also have a childlike sense of humor.
I told you we were idiots. Okay. What is fantasy romance as a genre? We are not going to answer that question, but we're going to pretend to. It's going to be great. I don't have that much confidence in my intellectual abilities. Like, I think that's overestimating what I can accomplish. But we're going to talk about it together and come to some conclusions. So to start off, fantasy romance is two genres mashed together. So you'll often have fantasy with a subgenre of romance tied in, or romance with a subgenre of fantasy tied in, depending on which way you want to take things. Depends on the author. There's no right or wrong way. People saying that there's a right or wrong way, you can take a left turn and get out of here. So, we welcome all sorts. If you write primarily romance, power to you. If you write primarily fantasy, power to you. Like, Mariah and I are the opposite ends of the spectrum. That's how this works.
True.
Whichever one you choose, it's all good. And if you choose one and not the other at all, you're also welcome here. But we are talking about fantasy romance together. So if you have no interest in this topic, find a different episode.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, you'll find something that you like and will make you laugh at some point. That's our goal. But anyway, fantasy romance, this is going to be a tangential episode. Like,
yeah,
we should just disclaim that right at the front. Our entire lead up to recording this was very tangential and we barely got started. And I'm already going off my notes. I'm going to go back to my notes. Talking about fantasy romance, I ripped this straight from Wikipedia. So I quote probably the most important and intelligent people on the internet. Some publishers distinguish between romantic fantasy, where the fantasy element is most important, and fantasy romance, where the romance are most important, which is what we just said. Others say that the borderline between fantasy romance and romantic fantasy has essentially ceased to exist, or if it's still there, it's moving back and forth constantly.
I do agree with that.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with the others quoted in this context. Like, we're splitting hairs. But essentially, fantasy romance comes down to stories that rely heavily on both fantasy worlds and the romantic relationships between the main characters. It's simple. But just like with romance, there's scales and spectrums, depending on how steamy you want it to be or how complex you want your world building to be. And you're the author, so you get to choose. You get to write your own story. It's very
exciting. Choose your own adventure.
Choose your own adventure. Exactly. Also, that's just kind of like, you know, that's the boring, basic definition information that we like to occasionally do at the beginning of these. I would like to add a note at the beginning of this episode before we get too deep into it, that for the purposes of this episode, when I say fantasy, I'm not talking about your personal romantic fantasies that we literally never want to hear about ever. Like, no. Take that out of your brain. Like, if you can just, like, remove it from your brain entirely, that would be good. I'm talking about the book genre of fantasy novels.
Is that what you've done? So every time we say fantasy on this episode, I'm going to think about my personal romantic fantasies.
You are so welcome. Don't you dare share that with me.
I won't. But I do agree with Elise. There's a lot of discussion about what fantasy romance is and the quality of it. And just like with any genre, there's different types. There's going to be like entry-level romanticy. If you haven't heard that term before, it's pretty straightforward. It's romance and fantasy smushed together. Mm-hmm. anyways, entry level would be like less world building, less politics, more just relationship driven. There's lots of long series out there with like a complicated fantasy world with like a pretty good romance, like throughout the series. There's quite a lot of those. And there is also stories out there which are essentially a classic romance novel with a fantasy based setting and a world. So there's a lot of variety in my own head. So this is not technically correct, but this is how I categorize it. Is fantasy romance to me is a fantasy novel with a strong love story, and romantasy is a romance novel with a fantasy setting and stakes. Do you like how confused we've made everyone?
I think it's straightforward. I think it works.
Perfect. And now we can do our first page critique.
Death was liberation. Queen Lana of Stormswell did not go to her execution in fear. She'd known this was inevitable the moment the king chose her. He had a reputation worse than her own. She'd survived as long as she could. She regretted nothing. She said nothing. The axe fell, and her life began. Chapter 1. Afterlife. Who are you? Lana was supposed to be dead. If she was anywhere, she was supposed to be surrounded by eternal hellfire, prepared to eat her soul over and over until the end of time. That's what her grandmama had claimed in their final meeting. But this was most definitely not hell. At least, not that version of it. This was a castle. Stone, cold and smooth, rose at least 4 stories high, surrounding the muddy courtyard that stunk of horse and cattle, sweat and excrement. It didn't help that it was raining. But Lana was not getting wet. She still wore the black simple wool gown she had worn to her execution. Her hand went to her throat. Maybe she hadn't gone to her execution yet? Had it been a dream? No. A thick ridge of scar tissue rippled on her throat as she swallowed. Even the white cap that held her thick black hair out of the way, all the better for the executioner to see where to swing his axe, was still in place atop her head. So what the hell was going on? Or, more accurately, what kind of hell was this? The woman in front of her cleared her throat loudly.
So my overall thoughts were, the first line is killer, and I love it. What a great way to kick off our first page. And in this first paragraph, I will say I would like to see a hint of why she married the king if she knew this would be her fate. Did she do it like for her family, for her country? And she says she regretted nothing. So did she achieve her aim in marrying him? So that I feel like is important information. We don't need all of it, but I would love like a little, just a little hint of it on the first, that first paragraph there. Especially the part where she says, she said nothing. I would cut that and then add a little bit about why she married the king. And I just think it would hit different, if you will. But as we get into the first chapter, I quite like that she had a scar from the execution and that she's confused and not panicking. Like that's queen behavior, if you will. She's like, I'm not going to freak out. I'm just going to take the lay of the land here and figure out what's happening. So first page on its own is intriguing enough for me to keep going, but there's also a couple sentences at the end that I would like to see some edits on. So she talks about her cap holding her hair back and she says, what the hell was going on? That seemed too modern of a phrase given what we have so far, like the vibes and the setting that I'm getting so far. And then the woman standing in front of her seems to put someone in front of her without her having noticed yet, which is a bit confusing. Like someone just appear in front of her, or did she just not notice her there? And that can also depend on what you're doing with this, if they're ghosts or whatever. But I think that would be something like just tidy that up a little, and then this page would actually be completely perfect.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. I bumped on the same thing with the woman at the end. Like the way it's phrased currently, it feels like the woman was standing there the whole time and we're only now getting that information, which feels like it came too late. Like we should have known there was someone standing there with the descriptions earlier on. But if the person just kind of appears and Lana didn't notice until that moment, then just add a little transition sentence expressing that and you're good to go. Because, mm-hmm. yeah, this page is fabulous. Like, I have very few notes and edits. But, okay, I do have one thing to say that everyone needs to listen very closely because you may never hear me say this ever again in your lives. This prologue worked for me.
Ooh.
I hate prologues for the most part. Yeah, that is on the record. We've talked about prologues multiple times. Mm-hmm. Whenever they come up as a first page, we talk about prologues. And I say, like, do you really need to do this? Really consider if you really need to. And I think in this case, yeah, you really needed to do it. And I think you did it well. So super short. It was super quick. And then we mm-hmm. immediately get to follow the same character into the first chapter. So we don't get that yes. frustrating, disjointed, like, what happened to the prologue characters and will we ever see mm-hmm. them again?
I know, you spend the whole book waiting to see the prologue characters again, like, or what happened there.
They were dead
the
whole time or something. Yeah. No, none of yeah. that crap. So yeah, I enjoyed mm-hmm. it. Each line was like really carefully chosen, it feels like. So everything mm-hmm. felt super punchy and poignant and like it all needed to be there. And that's all I have to say about that. And then chapter one sets the scene very beautifully. Like, we know where we are. We're in a courtyard in a castle. I had some little like wording suggestions to make that flow better and make that establishing that setting a little bit clearer, but on for the most part, like, it's just we know where we're at. And mm-hmm. then the home run moment is the scar tissue description, because that was yes. so disgusting and I loved oh, it. Oh, lovely.
So gross. I loved it.
So gross. I loved it. Yeah.
We see that a lot, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. And then my only other little note was clarifying when that woman appears and how that works. And then I had a thought, and this, I don't have enough information to say this with full confidence, so do take it with a grain of salt, but the mm-hmm. last line of the prologue, the axe fell and her life began. I almost want that to be something different. Mm-hmm. And it might just be because I don't know enough yet, in which case disregard. But I feel like it would be more powerful, more punchy, if that line can give us just a hint more, either about the character themselves, about her circumstances, or and the thing that I'm kind of latching onto is about whether she expects to wake up or not.
Yeah.
Because it
yeah,
kind of, I that think line, to me, it seems like, okay, she knows that she's going to wake up in the afterlife, but then she wakes up mm-hmm. and she doesn't expect to be there. So there's a disconnect mm-hmm. there. And I get
it's
that it's
small,
a prologue,
but yeah.
I bumped
I agree.
On it.
Yeah. Okay. And now that you're saying that, I'm thinking that line could be fixed very easily by something like the axe fell and her freedom began or something like that. Because, like, she's mm-hmm. free from that. And, like, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I mean,
I had a suggestion of the axe fell and her real work began.
Ooh,
because
yeah,
it sounds like she's been like mm-hmm. she did a lot of work and she knew she was going to mm-hmm. end up dead for it, and she did. Mm-hmm. But that would be more like, okay, something new is going to happen and she's not actually like dying in the way we think she's dying, and mm-hmm. she has more to do yet. I don't know. It's a single word change there that may not make a difference to some people, but that would make a difference to me. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, that's only if she actually knows that it's not like that she's gonna
yeah
not come back to life but wake up in the afterlife. Like, if she doesn't know that, then I think that line could be edited to make that mm-hmm. clearer. Because mm-hmm. yeah, I think that was the thing that made me bump on it, was that it sounds kind of like she knows what's going to happen next, but then she wakes up and it's completely unexpected.
Yeah.
So
I think even if you knew it was coming, like, you're about to get beheaded.
Yeah.
There's probably going to be a little bit of panic happening there. Mm-hmm.
No matter how queenly you are.
Yeah, yeah. I think you'd be like, well, shit.
Just this a little bit of that.
It's actually happening. Yeah. I mean, they brought me up to the block and everything, but I don't know.
Will it hurt? We don't know.
But yeah, overall, I mean, that was a great mm-hmm. first page. And yeah. I would totally keep reading like yeah. that.
Exactly.
Sounds like a super fun story to me.
It is a slam dunk. Yeah. Even if none of those changes were made, I would keep reading. So mm-hmm. we're being nitpicky.
Me
here.
Too. Yeah.
But yeah, really good work. That first page was actually very fitting for this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know. I guess we don't know if that book would be a romantic or not. Mm-hmm. But it was fantasy for sure.
And I cannot remember if I did that on purpose or not. It might have just
been. Well, let's
been
say that you did. It was deliberate, and we're going to go
yeah.
with
that. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that option.
I like it. Pretend I did stuff on purpose. It makes me look smart.
Yes, and that's all we spend our time doing, making ourselves look smarter.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. The glasses really do it for you.
They're working for me. All right, let's do
this. So, the rise of fantasy romance. Like this, when I saw this note document, this felt like such a big topic to me. So I decided to take the easy way out. I'm just going to start listing fantasy romance titles and authors that I recognize in like, this is the approximate chronological order in which they appeared in my life.
All right. I like it.
I'm on like the tail end of the millennials. So if that helps you. Then
I'm like an elder millennial.
There's an age gap. But anyway, the first one would be the Alana series by Tamora Pierce, The Goddess. Twilight by Stephanie Meyer. The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. Graceling by Kristen Cashor. Don't shoot me. The Cruel Prince by Holly Black. And A Court of Thorns and Roses by S.J. Moss. So I actually have no idea when Graceling came out, and it might be out of order. It's just I discovered that later and really enjoyed it. But disclaimer, I haven't necessarily read all of these. Nope, that's a lie. I have read Twilight. I resisted for a long time, and then I was like, okay, but it's so popular. Like, is it actually good?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, it was not, but I read it anyway.
I read it also. My friends, like, made me read it, even though I wasn't super into it. And I read it, and I was like, well, immediately forgot everything that happened in it. So, and I never did see the movies, although my friend was an extra in them.
Oh, that's wild. I did. Yeah. So I read the first book and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not finishing this series. Well, I'll watch the movies to like find out what happened. Regrets. Like,
oh, really?
I shouldn't have done that either. It was
I wonder if you watch the movie as like a drinking game, if it'd be okay. We did that with 50 Shades of Grey, and I got plastered. I couldn't tell you the second half of the movie because it was like, can't remember what the rules were. You had to like drink every time she bit her lip or drink every time. And so all of a sudden, of course, I'm doing it with wine.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the rest of the movie. Yeah.
Oh,
so,
man.
I'm just saying, use caution, people.
Yeah. Pace yourselves. Anyway. All that to say, romance books have been like they've had a massive market for a long, long time. It's not like they're new. And I mean, fantasy books have seemed maybe a bit more niche until the last couple of decades.
Yeah,
the audience seems to have grown beyond what you typically would have pictured as a fantasy fan in the 1900s. So even though I don't have any data to back anything up that I'm saying here, my instinct is that not only has fantasy grown a lot as a genre in the last several decades, but so has fantasy romance as a genre.
Yeah and nothing exposes the age gap more than the fact that you said the 1900s without even cringing. You freak. I was like, the 1900s, like 1910. Oh my god.
No, yeah.
So thanks for that.
You're so welcome.
Rude reminder of how old I actually am. Anyways, so fantasy romance was what got me back into reading after a really long hiatus. I'm sure this has happened to lots of people when you go to school after you graduate high school. Like, you tend to read a lot for school and you tend to stop reading for fun. At least that's what happened to me. So A Court of Thorns and Roses is what got me back into it. And shout out to S.J. Moss for making my bank account suffer because it has exploded. If anybody follows me on Bookstagram, you know I have a problem. Like, I went to the independent bookstore the other day because I love them. They brought me on my order and the girl's like, would you like a catalog? And I was like, no. She looked like I offended her. And I was like, no. I said, it's not. I said, it's just, I have a problem. I don't need a catalog.
Oh my
and she's
God.
Like, oh, no, I get it. And I was like, So that happened to me. That was fun. Anyway, back to the episode. So with Kindle Unlimited and the rise of self-publishing, which has been awesome, there is way more fantasy romance out there than ever before. It's like massively exploded, I would say, just since I started reading more heavily again in the last like 5 years or so. So with a massive expansion of the genre, you're going to find great books and not so great books, just like with any genre, you know. And the thing I actually really like about fantasy romance is I'm seeing so many female authors find a lot of success with the genre where they would have been overlooked if they had just been classified as fantasy once upon a time.
Sure.
That was a very male-dominated genre for a long time, so it's really cool to see that. And for people that don't like romance or want to shit talk romance, I would just like to remind you that romance is the biggest selling genre. In 2022, it generated over $1 billion in revenue. It's like 1.44 billion in 1 year. So yeah, the fantasy romance genre has become a great crossover for a lot of fans. And yeah, I can't see it changing anytime soon. I think it's been a really fun change.
Doubtful. Yeah. If it follows the trend of romance at all, like it doesn't drop off.
Yeah, it won't drop.
Like, people just keep wanting more of those kinds of stories. It's like popcorn. I can't stop.
I can't stop. Yeah, can't stop.
So good. Sorry, that story killed me. Like, your reaction. No, no catalog.
I know. Don't I felt dare. So bad. Like, my, it was like my gut reaction. I was like, no, you're not.
I can just see it happening too. And it's like a comedy scene in a movie. Like, no. Like,
oh, yeah. It happened exactly like that. And I drove away and I was like, God, you're so embarrassing. I had my dog with me, or one of the dogs with me, and I swear she was like, yeah, you sure are.
if I was with you, I probably would just burst out laughing and like tension diffused.
You would have gone like beet red. You would have been like, I'm so embarrassed to be
No, I would have laughed so hard. I was like, that is like the most perfect response I've ever seen to anything in my life. So good.
At least they know. So now every time I pull up, be like, here's the girl with the problem.
Here she is. And I love that you said reading more heavily, like you're drinking more heavily, but no, it's books.
I didn't even realize I did that. I don't know how else to describe it, because like I was casually getting back into reading. You know, I was like, I read like Outlander.
You had a glass of wine in the evening every once
In a while. And then it became suddenly like two bottles a day because I have so many books.
Did she say bottles? She meant books.
Yeah, books. Because in 2022 I read 150 books. So
are you serious?
Yeah.
Insane.
I also think that's a great like gauge for how bad my mental health was. Right. Because that's what I was doing instead of like, you know, existing. It was great though. I read a lot of really good books. Anyway, oh my gosh, we did say we would go off on a tangent.
We did. We warned everyone. So yeah, everyone. They're still here. It's their own fault.
Yes. But and we love you. Please stay.
Yes, we do.
we're getting back to the episode.
We should probably say stuff like that more often to just keep them around. But thanks for being here. We appreciate you. Okay. Check that off the list. We're supposed to talk about tropes next. But if you've listened to like our fantasy deep dive episode or our romance deep dive episode in this season just a couple months ago, there's going to be a lot of crossover. So I think we're not going to go too deep into this section. Like, fantasy romance is a genre mashup on its own. So anything, any tropes that you see in either genre will likely lend themselves here. But again, depending on what your goal is. So if your goal is to be more heavily on the fantasy and you want the romance to be a subplot, you're going to want to lean more on fantasy tropes and like reader expectations in that realm. And then like you need the romance one to follow the right trajectory, but you don't need to be as worried about it. And vice versa, if you're going for more romance, you need to follow the romance formula, so pay more attention to that. And then fantasy can be a little bit lighter, so like, I mean, so many of these go so well in both genres. The one bed trope, the one horse trope. I put that in
One. Yeah. You know what? You can come to the barn one day and we'll get on the dude together.
Try it.
And you can, see how it feels.
I fully believe. Just like going on that trail ride and riding the horse by myself is like, don't put two people on a saddle. Are you kidding me?
I know. Crazy.
Anyways, the chosen one trope, the enemies to lovers and friends to lovers, like those fit in both genres. I was going to say one other thing, if I can remember it. I can't. That's it.
Okay.
That's all I've got.
If it comes to you, you'll.
It'll
added to the conversation. But yeah, I would say in fantasy, romance, romantasy, whatever we're going to call it this episode, enemies to lovers is the front seat trope. You know, it's the number one trope you're going to see. Yeah. Yes. And it works great in fantasy romance. So the fantasy world lends itself to a great setup for an enemies to lovers. Mm-hmm. Like you can do, the options are endless.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, in contemporary romance, it's like a little hard. Like I'm in the real world, like I'm my own biggest enemy. So like that trope wouldn't work for me really in contemporary. So I'm like, who is going to be worse to me than me? And in fantasy or sci-fi, I'm like, bring it, bitch. I love this trope so much. Yeah, I'm a sucker. I just wrote my sci-fi romance I just drafted is enemies to lovers. Mm-hmm. But I will say real enemies to lovers, where they're actually enemies first, which I will get into this rant later.
We'll save that one for another time.
Yeah, well, not even for another time. It's later in the episode.
Just later. Oh, well, buckle up.
Just later in general.
Here we go. That's exciting. Okay. So the rise of fantasy romance, the common tropes of fantasy romance, and then this kind of jumps off of that. What makes a good fantasy romance? How do you know you're doing it right? And well, have I got news for you. It's completely subjective.
Yes,
it's not completely, but like, okay, so fantasy readers have expectations, romance readers have expectations. This is what I was going to say earlier that I forgot that I now remembered. With romance in particular, romance readers expect a happy ending. If you do not give them a happy ending, you are not writing a romance. I don't know how to state that any clearer or more emphatically. Yeah. If you do not write a happy ending, you are not writing a romance. Hands down, bottom line.
Yeah.
There is no escaping this.
It can be the happy for now ending is also okay. Mm-hmm. Happy ever after is good. But if you do a thing like in Song of Achilles where you gut us, then no, it's not a romance.
It's just a tragedy.
Yes.
And that's not the same thing. Readers who go to the romance section of the bookstore looking for a romance off the shelf are not looking to be heartbroken by the end of it. Like, they want the good, warm fuzzies, not the I broke your heart and I stomped on it and then I buried it and then I dug it up a few days later to stomp on it again.
Yeah, we're here for the escapism. Romance is the most escapism genre to me. Like, so, I have a high standard for it.
You know how to make romance readers happy. Now we can move on. What makes a good fantasy romance? Again, very subjective. The right balance of fantasy versus romance for whoever happened to pick up the book that day. Like, good luck. Have fun. But you need a nice blend of subgenres that the reader themselves is particularly drawn to. And I think one of the things that you can say for sure is, like, the writer of whichever blend you're choosing needs to have respect for both genres in the genre mashup. If a romance writer wanted to write a romance and just threw in the fantasy aspect to, like, try and appeal to a different audience for this one book because they wanted to grow their market, fantasy readers can tell. Okay? Like, we can tell. I promise you. And nothing, nothing makes me more irritable than picking up the promise of, like, a beautiful fantasy romance and finding a basically a very basic and underdeveloped world that's just like a cardboard diorama backdrop for all the smut that the writer wanted to include. Like, that's not what I'm there for. And now it's been misrepresented, and now I'm upset, and I don't want to read it anymore. And I will never, probably never pick up a book from that author again because I feel lied to and I can't trust them. So be careful. Like, you can't just say that your book is going to be one thing to try and draw people in and then not deliver on that promise. Like, you do need to be honest. A really good example of a book that respects both genres very, very well is The Undertaking of Heart and Mercy.
Mm-hmm. Like, one of my favorite all-time books ever. I was squealing when I finished reading it. I went into it
expecting it to be, like, you said it was this amazing thing, and I was like, okay, I'm guessing it's, like, really heavy on the romance and really light on the fantasy, and, like, the romance will be really good, but I'll be disappointed by that. I was not disappointed.
No.
Every single little world-building thing that came up, I was like, how did this writer come up with this? This is amazing. I've never read anything like it. It is incredible. I love it so much. I just want to live in this world forever. Like, so much fun. And just did it justice on both ends of the spectrum. so beautifully done. We can't say a whole lot about like what to do's and not to do's for this, but we can talk about our own experiences as we've been doing. And so like personally, I want to know a lot more about the world and what makes that unique in a fantasy setting. If you're going to include fantasy, I'm going to want to know about that. Otherwise, why is it there? Why not just set it in any world? And then I'm familiar with the world and you don't have to waste our time on it. And you can just get on with the story that you actually want to tell. What is the story that you actually want to tell? If you're going to create some new world, it needs to have a point and a purpose and be engaging. So that's what I want to know about. Any mashup in this range of genres is going to be as much about the fantasy for me, if not more so. Like, that's what I care about more than about the romance. So if the book is going to lean too heavily into the relationship without giving me that interesting setting and like interesting magic or politics or both, I'm going to feel cheated. Like, it's going to be a bad experience, not just a kind of meh. It's going to be a bad experience. I came here for escapism, damn it. I expect it to deliver.
Give me escapism.
Give me what I want.
This happened semi-recently to me. I downloaded a book on, I think it was on Kindle Unlimited, and it sounded kind of different, and like I kind of went in blind. It was the one with had a really funny dedication, and I was like, I don't know if this is going to be my type, but I'm going to read it because people keep telling me it's really good. And so I did enjoy it. I gave it 4 stars, I think. But the thing I didn't love was we got so invested in the romance that the fantasy and the fantasy like subplot was kind of discarded for like a good portion of the book. And then when it finally did come back around in the end to give us, you know, the climax, blah, 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 I was like, well, I kind of forgot about that. And it didn't seem like that big of a deal until now. So it was one of those things where it was like the romance was heavily focused on, which was fine, but it was like at the expense of the fantasy and the world building and that plot line, which kept it from being 5 stars for me. But I did enjoy it. It was one of those books, like I was thinking about it when I wasn't reading it, but it was also one of the things I was thinking about was like what I would like to see more of, and I didn't get it. So I was a little disappointed, but it was still good. I would term that one as like a romanticy.
It wasn't
balanced enough between the two for me to consider like fantasy romance. Like how we made our own terms here.
Well, apparently that's what everyone does, so
it's true.
Fine.
Yeah, that being said, I think the right balance is completely subjective, just like you said. Like, I want a well-built world and I want a good cast of characters. I don't want just the love pairing to be like the only characters that have a lot of development. And I want them to have their own motivations and goals, like, because they were individual people first, you know. And I like a slow burn when it comes to fantasy romance. I think it just works better in fantasy because there's usually like another plot line that is maybe keeping them apart or making it hard for them to be together. So I kind of like that. But that's, again, that's a personal thing. Right. I like that. And yeah, I don't expect like Lord of the Rings world building. I don't need a bunch of pages on trees or anything.
Nope.
But I do want to see kind of the best of both genres. That's pretty much where I'm at. So like the standard's so high apparently, but I will read like so many things. I've read tons
That's
of.
True.
I'll read it. It sounds interesting. I'm going to read it. I've read some stuff like, I mean, everybody knows that listens. Like it's sci-fi, but I loved Ice Planet Barbarians, even though I literally picked it up because I was like, what is everybody on Bookstagram talking about? This sounds ridiculous. And then I read the first one, and then when I came up for air, I'd read 8.
Yep.
And I was like, oh my God, that was so fun. What year is it? It doesn't have to be, you know, like worthy of a Nobel Prize or anything, but I mean, I do want to see the best of both.
Yeah, it needs to do justice. And
totally.
I'm going to say it again because it's so good. Undertaking of Heart and Mercy is a study in how to do the best of both, in my opinion. So fabulously good.
And if you're not sure if you want to read that book and we haven't convinced you on the show yet, it's like You've Got Mail with zombies.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't sell you on it, nothing will.
Amen. Oh, so good. Okay, we've already talked about where writers go wrong a bit just in our last few minutes of conversation here, but we're going to go into that a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest way that writers go wrong is probably the misrepresentation of content. Like, I mean, obviously yeah. there's all those other things that you can do wrong, like poorly written characters and poorly written plot, and you didn't hire an editor and you didn't fix your plot holes, and well, shoot, nothing makes sense and it's not fun for anyone anymore. Like, those are the obvious.
You spelled your name wrong on the cover. Like, there's so many things that can go wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Didn't have a proofreader. Mm-hmm. Big mistake. But that's like more technical. This is more to do with the marketing, dare mm-hmm. I say. I think what I'm about to say is a lot of marketing.
I agree.
Misrepresented content, overpromising on either the fantasy or the romance, and then not delivering. Mm-hmm. Nothing will make me more upset. I cannot overstate this enough. And this is why, regardless of whether you're doing traditional publishing or self-publishing, query letters and back cover copy are very important. Yes. We hate writing it. Yes, it sucks. Yes, it's hard, and we feel like we can never get it right, and we fall into existential dread because we feel like we are going to amount mm-hmm. to nothing. But yes, you do need it. You can't cut this corner. Even
if you are self-publishing, exactly. Like, it's just so that you can do it and put your book in those terms that you know it well enough, and it's mm-hmm. done well enough. You've edited enough that you can do that.
So that you can find the right readers for your book. Otherwise, who knows what it's about? And like even mm-hmm. even mood boards and those crazy reels that people put together of like the vibes.
Yeah, I love those.
They're so important to get right, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to name any names because I probably don't know them. But we have all seen or heard the rise and fall on Book Talk when an author puts all of their effort into making a really good hype team and making this big deal about this upcoming release, and then forgets, for lack of a better term, to put that same effort into their actual manuscript.
Forgets to deliver on the product, but they got the marketing down.
Whoops. Big oops. Do not say that your book has something in it when you know that it doesn't, just because you're trying to get more readers. Mm-hmm. Those readers will give you one star. Those readers will bring your rating down. Those readers will drag your name through the mud on Twitter until everyone hates you for no reason. Yeah. And it's not because, like, it might not even because the book is bad. It might be a really good book, but you said it was for these people who it really wasn't for. And mm-hmm. now you've lied to them and they feel cheated and they feel like you have misled them on purpose. And that's just really icky to do. No one likes feeling that way. Mm-hmm. It'll not just hurt the sale for that book either. Like, think of the longevity of your career. If you're in this for more than one book, they'll never buy your next one. And they'll probably tell people, mm-hmm. I read this one by that author. They were a liar. They betrayed me. They stabbed me in the back and never touch anything that they ever do ever again. We are readers and writers. We are dramatic people.
This is true. We are so dramatic.
I will not take any of these words back.
You feel very strongly about this,
I really do agree. Like, it might seem like a good idea at the time, like just a few white lies, like who's it gonna hurt? It's gonna hurt you, it's gonna hurt your career, it's gonna hurt your reputation, and those things are important. Like, the views mm-hmm. and hype around your reels do not make your career. We could even argue that they don't sell your books, but that's a marketing discussion that I don't have the data to have right now, so I'm gonna leave it there.
And it also ruins your word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Like, people know I'm a big reader, and someone will be like, oh, have you read like so and so, and I'll be like, oh yeah, she glorifies abusive relationships, I don't read her book. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, I'm not gonna buy that. And then the next person that asks them about it, they might repeat what I said.
Exactly.
So you do have to be very careful that you are representing your work honestly.
Like, word of mouth is way bigger than we make it out to be. Like, I have mm-hmm. a couple of friends who, whenever they go away on holiday, they message me a couple weeks before, like, hey, what have you been reading? What should I read? And they will read what I tell them to. I don't know why. This is like, I feel like I'm in a position of authority that I do not deserve and I should not have, because I get to dictate.
Intoxicating power. Right?
I get to dictate what people read. I get to put ideas in their head. I get to choose what they focus on for the next 2 weeks of their escapism.
You're like, only read my book. That's the only recommendation.
I like literally never recommend my own stuff.
I know, I can see that.
It's a problem.
It's hard. Yeah. But so yes to everything Elise said before I get sidetracked. Totally forgot I had my own notes for everybody. So I posted a post to Bookstagram the other day, and mm-hmm. I asked people what they thought made a great fantasy romance, because I was very curious. I was like, outside of me and Elisa's opinions, you know,
please,
how on track are we with everybody else? Mm-hmm. I think we're pretty on track, because I agreed with like all of these things. So the first one is enemies to lovers is, of course, a very well-loved trope. Mm-hmm. Lots of people are like, that's my favorite. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people also had complaints about it, and I have my own complaint about it. So it dominates the genre, which is fine. And it's great. But the thing that I personally hate when this happens is when a book is heavily advertised, this goes into the misleading thing, heavily advertised as enemies to lovers. So I'm expecting like dagger to the throat, mm-hmm. followed by mm-hmm. a good time in the bedroom later.
Yeah.
That's what I'm expecting.
Yeah.
And what I get is like, oh, the male main character's been pining after her the whole time, even though he doesn't even know her at all, and she hates him for some flimsy reason, mm-hmm. you are mean or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I see it a lot, and I know why it happens, because I've done it myself when I'm writing, because it's easier to write the romantic bits than the enemy bits. It is easier, so much easier, especially when you're trying to make their relationship like redeemable. So like, you want to write them as enemies, but not like so far gone that they can't feasibly be together.
Yeah, I think that's, so. I think you've stuck the landing. You hit the nail on the head. I'm mixing metaphors so badly today.
It's, I do that all the time on here. Yeah.
But that is it. Like, when you write an enemies to lovers, enemies is a very strong word for a reason. Like, these people hate each other's guts because someone has done something so horrible, it feels unforgivable. And it's really hard to write the redeemable side of that. Like, how do you bring that relationship now to a point where they can stand being in the same room with each other, let alone, you know, the hanky-panky in the bedroom? Like, that is really hard. That's really hard. I appreciate that.
Like, think about like your biggest like nemesis. Like, everybody has like a work nemesis or something, a gym nemesis. Mm-hmm. So think about becoming like falling in love with that person, and tell me how far off do you think that possibility is? And then that is how you have to sell an enemies to lovers in a good, like, properly, mm-hmm. at least to me. And this is something I feel pretty passionate about, because I obviously just went on about it forever. Anyways, on to my next complaint that I gathered that we've already talked about a bit, is the lack of world building. So also drives me nuts. But I can see why it's appealing, though, at the same time, because sometimes you just don't have the capacity to absorb all the world building. Like, you just want something that's kind of like escapism. It's a little easier to read, but it's not set in the real world, because you don't want to read that right now. So like, I do get that, but don't abandon your world building, because it makes the book richer. Mm-hmm. And this is usually where it comes down to me classifying a book in my head as romanticy or fantasy romance.
Yeah.
Like, if it's lacking in world building and depth, then it's going to fall into like romanticy, because like the main focus was on the romance then. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I was just saying, that book that I read that I did like, it was just like lack of world building. Mm-hmm. But it kills me too, because usually the ones that have lack of world building like that, there's a ton of potential for the world building to be really good. Oh, and so that always kills me. I'm like, oh, so many things you could have done. It didn't even need to be overwhelming.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I can see this coming up in your notes. I wanted to jump in.
It's a cat, because I hate them so much.
When we talk about world building, I think that word can be misunderstood.
Yeah.
By a lot of people. Like, we're not talking about long, extensive paragraphs about the landscape and the culture. And, like, this is not a textbook. This is a story.
Yeah.
So we care about the story the most. Like, that is the story is the crowning glory. Mm-hmm. That's what we want to see moving. And big, massive info dumps about world building slows down the story. So that's not what we're asking for. When I say I want more world building, I want that woven in, like, throughout. Yeah. So I don't want a scene that is just about these two characters getting hot and bothered with each other. Like, mm-hmm. I want to see the world around them as that is happening. What is the culture like around them? What is influencing their choices and decisions? And what makes that interesting about this world that is not the same as the world that we live in?
Mm-hmm.
And it is in the small details. It's not the big, massive info dumps that I'm looking for here. It's the small details that really matter to me. That's what I'm talking about when I say
good world. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. And that brings us to my rant on info dumps, which I have done many times over. I think every season I have a solid rant. So this one's like quite short, but anyways, some readers have mentioned they feel this is becoming more and more common. And I do agree. And I think it's a sign of an underdeveloped story or like lack of good editing. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows how I feel about info dumps at this point, obviously. But there is a particular book series, and I've talked to many other readers about this book series, that has a very committed fan base, but even the committed fans have had enough and have started stepping away from the series because the info dumps are so bad. They're pages and pages long. Pages. Like, I mean, I can talk about, I mean, you guys were here for my horsey episode. I can talk about horses forever.
That was forever. An info dump. That's what that episode was.
You know, or like we do this thing when my husband and I get home from work, we like sit down and we like info dump about our days.
We do that too.
You know? Yeah. We call it the debrief or whatever, but it feels like an info dump. But like you don't want your whole story to feel like that. It shouldn't feel like that. And it's, if you're struggling with that, you need a writing buddy or like critique partner, something like that, so that they can be like, hey, like move this information here. What if you like, you know, add some dialogue and then throw that in there? It's much better that way.
Yeah. I feel like that's something that we see with authors who don't start writing in the fantasy genre. Like they start writing in a different genre, like contemporary romance, and they're really good at it and people really like them, so they read their books, but then the author decides or the publisher decides that the author is going to do the thing where they take their wonderful, wonderful romance writing and put it into a fantasy world. And then they just do it as though they know what they're doing, but it's very different. And I don't think that they give the fantasy elements the dignity that they need, which leads to like, well, fantasy, it means I just have to tell them a whole bunch about this world and make sure they understand every little detail so that they can get the context. And then we can move on to the fun stuff, which is the romance, because all that other stuff is just boring. And like, if that's the attitude that you're coming to with a fantasy romance,
this not the genre for you.
Yeah. That's... Or read more. Read more fantasy books.
Actually leads me to the next pet peeve is modern language in fantasy. So this is, this one's a kicker for me too, because I can't get into a book that uses the same slang as like the young people at work do when they're wearing corsets and riding dragons. Like, I just don't think you're going to be like, slay when you're getting on your horse to ride to the neighbor's house. Like,
I just threw up a little bit in my mouth.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. So I won't name the book here because I won't do it on the episode or the show, but I didn't make it past chapter 4 of a very well-loved, very popular book because of the modern language and, I mean, lack of character motivation. That was big too. It made it feel really high school, and it was supposed to be an adult fantasy romance, and I was like, well, this sort of feels like someone wrote a not good young adult fantasy and then aged it up by adding swear words and sex and tried to make it an adult fantasy. And that is not what the genre is. It just felt really cheap. And I was so disappointed. And the book is now
cheated, and then
and that book is now in Elise's possession for her evaluation. See how far she gets. I'm curious because a lot of people who I love and have amazing taste have loved that book. So it made me feel like, did she accidentally publish the first draft and I got it and everyone else got a different book? Because I feel like I'm reading a totally different book. Anyways,
I'm like scared and excited to read that one.
I'm excited for your opinions. I want you to annotate it for me so I can see what you were thinking when you were reading it.
we'll see if I make it past chapter 4.
If you get further than me, I'd be impressed. And the other thing that we talked about on Bookstagram is lack of friendship. So I've seen this play out time and time again. Yeah, we're here for the romance. But the main character's best friend can be more than a plot device. I find it fulfilling to read a romance with like well-represented friendships because it shows that the character values other people and the love interest isn't the only person that gives them any kind of will to live. That feels icky to me. I don't love that.
Yeah.
And that leads me to the insta love trope. So this one doesn't work for me, which is ironic because that is what happened in real life with my husband. Literally the day we met, I was like, oh my God, like I swear I love him already. And then right after we met, like he told me years later, he was like, I was just like hoping I'd get to marry you one day. And I
Oh
was like,
my God.
stop, that's so cute. So it happens apparently more in real life than it should happen in books. But I just don't find it believable, especially in a fantasy setting. Like there's usually outside forces at work. And I mean, I can't see it working that way. Like in certain books, like in fantasy books that have mates or whatever, yeah, that's
You
like
have a
part of
magical
the trope.
explanation for it then.
Yes. If there's no magical explanation, like I'm not gonna walk up to like some sweaty, dirty warrior guy and be like, I am so in love with you. You smell like shit. Like
That would be like major red flag for me if someone did that. It's like, oh,
yeah.
they
Oh,
have
you're
problems
crazy.
upon problems and I should run far away right now.
Yeah, you know what? I wonder if that's what it is for me, is that like people who if you've ever met someone who like is so into you and
That
like
comes
pushes
on
the
really
comes on
strong.
really strong, like more than anything, that makes me not want them in my life at all.
Yes.
So I think that's partly
Yes.
why it kind of weirds me out. Like, who would be okay with that kind of pushy? I mean, I see it in contemporary where it's done well, where one of them is like, oh my God, like I really like this person. And but they don't come on too strong. They're like,
They're
okay, I
trying,
like
they're
this
always
person.
trying to like temper it and be like, okay, I really like
Yes.
them, but I know this is too early and I don't want to freak them out, so I'm gonna try and
Yeah.
be like really good about it.
And then later when he's like, oh, by the way, I've been in love with you since the day we met. And she's like, oh, that's so cute. But if he told her that at the beginning, she'd be like, hey, stalker,
Yikes. Yeah,
go, get away from me.
exactly. Yeah.
So but anyway, I'm sure at some point in my life, I have rated a book with insta-love 5 stars. I just don't know which one it is, if I have. But, and it the trope does work too. All the tropes work for a reason. I just mean in this particular genre mashup, doesn't work quite the same.
We did talk about this a little bit in the last couple of minutes. The difference between adult fantasy romance and young adult fantasy romance. And we tried to have this conversation in our last episode about horror because, that's a very pertinent part of the conversation. And I think Sky Regina, our guest from last episode, did a really, really good job at addressing this question honestly,
Yes.
especially for the horror genre. But I think this applies pretty much across the board that every person's capacity for things, doesn't matter what things, it could be for the light and fluffy things, it could be for gritty, gruesome things, every person's capacity is different. Maria and I can't handle horror on any level. We've made that very clear, but Skye seeks it out regularly. Like, that's what she enjoys to read and watch. Maria spends her time reading bodice rippers while I sit on the sidelines trying to like hide my blush when characters brush hands delicately on the
You know how I hit my NaNoWriMo word count? I wrote multiple chapters of smut. And I was like, yeah, that really pumps up the word count. I've been writing wrong for years. But yeah, that is the difference. And then my favorite part is whenever I have a scene like that and Elise workshops my manuscript, there are no comments on
Absolutely
that.
none. It's like, full disclosure, I read this, but I'm not commenting on it.
Yeah.
No
No
comment.
comment.
I
I'm
will
like, well,
not
no
go on the
comments
record.
mean it was good.
It means that I skimmed it, I felt things, and I didn't want to
Yes.
acknowledge it, so I kept going.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Sorry. I'm
But anyway,
cackling now.
every person's capacity is different. Every person will be okay with certain things and not okay with other things. Different parents will let their kids read different things. Like, I was not allowed to read a lot of the things that my friends were reading, and vice versa. Like, everyone's threshold is at a different level. So it's
At
really
least my parents, they're like, she's reading, that's good. I'm reading like a Highlander romance novel at like 16, has like a shirtless guy on the cover, and my mom's like, ah,
She's
she's
reading? Oh,
reading.
good.
Whatever.
Amazing.
Oh,
But yeah, it's a really tough conversation.
I love it.
I think one of the ways that this is best illustrated in popular fantasy romance these days is just take Throne of Glass by S.J. Moss and then take A Court of Silver Flames by S.J. Moss. And if you're old enough, read them both back to back and tell me, what is the difference between these two novels?
Can you imagine recommending A Court of Silver Flames as a young adult?
I cannot. Like,
I mean, I read a lot of romance and I don't blush easily. And I was blushing when I read that. I was like, good Lord, she stepped up her game in this one.
I have, I have no shame in singling that book out.
Yeah, there's, no, like, there's,
there is arguments about whether ACOTAR is YA or adult, but once you hit Silver Flames, it should not be a question anymore.
100% by that point.
I don't care what your threshold is. Like, there are points where it's like, this is obviously adult or this is obviously YA. There are things that blur those lines, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, like there's, I mean, obviously the age of the protagonist is usually a good clue, but not always.
Yeah.
And young adult can have some pretty dark stuff. You know, I'm thinking Hunger Games here. Mm-hmm. That's actually surprisingly dark. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Adult tends to take it like a little further and maybe like a little bit more of the mental load of that type of stuff, like the darker stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's like more explicit sex scenes in adult versus like in YA, they're kind of implied or glossed over or some, you know, or they're like pretty tame. Like ACOTAR, the first book is like quite tame, you know, like it's insinuated, but it's not graphic. So that I would say ACOTAR falls under YA, but like you said, A Court of Silver Flames, like that is so much more explicit. There's just no way. And there's also kind of a different voice to adult books, which we're not going to get into in this episode, but that is one of the things that like YA tends to steer a different direction. Like you're not gonna find, when you find a fantasy romance for young adult, you're looking at stuff like Caravelle by Stephanie Garber, those kind of books. And then when you're thinking adult, like you get up into different content, like we were just talking about A Court of Silver Flames
or like Undertaking of Heart and Mercy is adult.
Yeah, that's adult for sure. Yeah. And oh gosh, the book I was thinking of just went right out of my head.
Shoot.
It's fine.
I had that moment earlier. You can have your moment now. If you think of it later, bring it up again. The last thing that I wanted to say about this topic, YA versus adult, is that I think the older we get, the more we tend to underestimate and undercredit what the younger generations can handle.
True.
And cannot handle. And I see it, like, I see it happening in the, because I'm, we're kind of in that middle range of ages where like we can still remember what it was like to be a teenager, but we can also see what's coming for us in the following decades. And we're able to have more empathy for both sides. Whereas people who are a bit older than we are, I just see them do it a lot where they just don't give kids credit where credit is due. Like,
that's true.
They don't appreciate what kids go through and how much they do need to process on their own and how much they understand without you having to spoon feed them anything. Like, kids aren't smart. Kids are really smart.
There's not like some magic switch when you go overnight from 17 to 18 that means that you can handle different content or that you suddenly don't understand young adult content because you're now officially an adult, even though I didn't, still don't feel like an adult and I'm 34. You know, that's subjective too. But yeah, like young adult, like I think that that's so true because I think a lot of parents also want to shield their kids from that stuff. And I can totally sympathize with that.
Right.
But I think it's probably better for them to process and learn that stuff in fiction and not in real life.
I think the genre of YA, like young adult, gets a bad rap of like, that's kids' books. Like they don't talk about anything important. Like, no, YA is a lot less innocent than you think it is. Like, just, you know, go to the library, stand in the YA section and pick a book from like, go every few letters of the alphabet and pick like five books off the shelf. And guaranteed you won't find the same thing in all of those.
True.
Some things are going to surprise you and you'll be like, this is YA. And it's because you're old.
Well, I know I'm old because when I read young adult now, which is why I don't read a lot of it, I am agreeing with the parents. Like, of course you can't just go marry that person you just met, you idiot. I want to get a room. Whereas, like, if I read that book when I was 16, I'd be like, yeah, you tell them, they're controlling you. No, I mean, life experience is like said, you can see both sides.
Yeah. And then I just try to keep in mind that, like, what I grew up with as a kid and what, and a young adult, is not going to look like what the next generation experiences. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be different. Yeah. It's not going to be the same. And that's it, that it works that way every time. And every mm-hmm. generation is like, oh, kids these days, I can't yeah. believe what they're consuming, terrible media. Like, every single generation yeah. does that to the next one. So I feel it's like true. there's something off there. There's
maybe if millennials right. can break the cycle.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like that's giving us a little too much credit.
We're like the first generation to go to therapy, so I think we might be all right.
I don't know. I still fully expect to be like shocked and appalled at all the wrong times and places. Like, we're going to be the next boomers. Like, it's just...
Yeah, totally. I'm afraid of technology. Like, I'm like, I can handle it now, but what about in like 30 years? I'm going to be like, how do I use my cell phone?
I fully intend to be a gaming grandma, but, you know.
Yeah, me too.
We'll see how it goes.
We're going to try. We'll try and keep up.
Got to keep my eyesight in order to do that.
Yeah, me too. Me and my glasses now.
All right. We're winding down, and as we've come to take as tradition, we're going to give some book recommendations now. I mean, for some people, this is probably their favorite part of the episode. Skip to the end. Whatever you want to do. If you listen to this part,
who cares happy. What they say the rest of the time? We're the just here books. For the
books. We are here for the books. So, as I've already said, I prefer my fantasy with a side of romance, not the other way around. And that will be reflected in my book recommendations. If you're looking for something more steamy, please rely on what Maria will say after me.
Yeah.
If you prefer romance as a subplot like I do, some of my favorites are like anything by Tamora Pierce. That's going to be YA, but she's just a wonderful medieval fantasy writer. She writes really awesome female protagonists in a world where, at least when I was growing up, it felt like there weren't enough of those. Yeah. She was kind of one of my introductory authors to, oh, this is what it looks like to have like a badass female protagonist in this setting. Finally.
I love that.
Thank God. Great. The Graceling series by Kristen Cashore. Got it wrong again. I'm so sorry, Kristen. is another great one. Very fun series that I would reread if I had time to reread things. And City of Brass and the Devabad trilogy by S.A. Chakraborty is more adult, I would say.
Yeah, it's adult. Yeah.
But it's very much like fantasy with a side of romance. The romance mm-hmm. doesn't... That was another one where I expected the romance to be the main plot.
I think I expected it to to feature more strongly, and it didn't, mm-hmm. and I wished it had. Oh, but yeah. It is like the most perfect series.
It's such a wonderful series. And like I can hear that of like wanting more of the romance. I think there was a part of me mm-hmm. that was like, oh, it would have been nice, but
yeah, not a ton more, because the book was amazing.
I think the balance I think that was like more of a subjective preference, and the balance of the books mm-hmm. was perfect. I just want to say the books were perfect. That's all.
Yeah, they're perfect. Leave it at that. The same, like as I read them, like, well, now I want more, because
I think that's what it is.
Read them for the first time again.
Now we want more. So now we're trying to find things to critique about it. It's just like, no, we just want more. Just write
we just
more.
Want more that's of fine. It. Yeah. It'd be great if she could just write like a little like novella of them.
Well, didn't she do fun. Was it River Silver?
Yeah, there's River of Silver, which I think is more like
is that a prequel?
Like, not a prequel. I think it's like scenes that weren't
deleted scenes.
Type of thing. Okay. Yeah, but I haven't actually read it yet. It's been on my shelf for a while. Surprised I haven't read it yet, given how much I loved it. But I kind of was like, I want to reread the whole series.
That's because it's on my shelf. That's why you haven't read it yet.
Oh. Well, that explains a lot.
I've had it for months.
What does that say about my collection that I didn't even know you had that one? What does that say about me? Anyway, back to our recommendations and not my hoarding tendencies.
Back to the Library of Maria. My next one is, and I don't think you've read this one, A Darker Shade of Magic by Vivi Schwab. The series is absolutely incredible. Like, I love it so much. It's amazing. I haven't read the latest one that came out quite recently. But the, Darker Shade of Magic is the first book in the series, and it is all the fantasy you could ever desire. And then the romance, like, it's not, I wouldn't even call it a subplot, like, it's prominent enough. There's no sex scenes, but the relationships between the characters and the romantic relationships are just so well done. This author does people so well, like, mm-hmm. so complex and dynamic. All of her characters are amazing. So that's what, just a really good one. I could nerd out about
on my shelf
forever.
Waiting for
good. And then the Merciful Crow series by Margaret Owen is another one of those where, like, just the fantasy world is delectable. Like, it's incredible how complex she's made it and how interesting and how different it felt when I read it. Like, I feel like I haven't read anything like it before, but I probably have. I don't know. It just felt very unique to me. And then the romance story in that one. In the first book, it was very satisfying. In the second book, the turns that it took was very surprising. And yeah, just kept shocking me. I was like, I did not predict this, and I don't like where this is going. Please tell me that it gets better. And then things happen, and it's so interesting.
Does
so
it well get done. Better before I add it to my list?
Yeah, it does. It's good.
Okay, good.
It won't make you cry. Okay, it might good. Make you cry a little bit in the middle, but then the ending won't make you cry.
Okay, I can handle that.
It's very good. It's so wonderful. It's a duology.
Ooh, I'm here for that.
The last three on my list really quick. Forging Silver into Stars by Brigid Kammerer. Anything by her really is really fun. It's very much YA, and you can tell that it's YA, like very distinct YA voice. The characters feel young. But that's one of the things I really like about it. They're young, and they're struggling through their issues, and they do it really well in complex ways. And I think, I don't know about Forging Silver into Stars, but her other series, A Curse So Dark and Lonely, has rep for cerebral palsy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I have that one on my shelf. I just haven't read it yet.
It's really good series. And they're connected. Like, the characters that are in one show up. She does that a lot with her books. So just keep reading. Her stuff is great. And then The Cruel Prince, Folk of the Air trilogy. That's a nice proper enemies to lovers there.
That is a proper enemies to lovers. But if you're expecting actual romance in the first book, you won't really get it.
Yeah,
it's in the second and the third.
You have to keep going.
Yeah, and I remember reading The Cruel Prince, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to keep going with this series. I'm not sure it's for me. And then I read the end, and I was like, well, that was a really good ending. Like, really pulled it together in the end. So I was like, I'll read the next one. And then I devoured
them. Yeah, and then you shoved them at me and were like, you have to read this immediately.
Yeah, I was like, read these immediately. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were super good.
Yeah, and then my last one on the list is Spinning Silver by Naomi Novik. And she does this thing with her books, at least with this one, and then Uprooted was another one that she did this with, where the romance, like, I knew it was going to be in there, but I wasn't really expecting it. And then it was surprising, but in, like, a really refreshing way. And I thought she just did it really, really well.
Okay. I haven't read that one yet, but it's actually been on my shelf forever. I bought it because you told me to, and it's just been staring at me for years.
It's so good.
I'm like, what day am I picking you up?
So good.
Don't know when. So my recommendations, let's see, I've got two lists sort of. So we're going to start with the spicy options.
What's the other list?
The not spicy.
Okay. I thought you were going to say spicy and, like, really spicy. Like, we're getting into the degrees of hot peppers.
I mean, like I said, I don't, like, remember books super well after I finish them. So, like, I remember the vibes more than anything. So there's a few where I was like, I'd recommend them, but I can't remember the spice level. So just come back to the one here. So we've already mentioned it multiple times this episode, The Undertaking of Heart and Mercy by Megan Bannon. That is, like, one of my all-time favorites. It's got really unique world building, a very cool premise. And it's, like, the cutest pen pal romance. And it's a bit enemies to lovers too, but it's a kind of a soft enemies to lovers. In a good way. Otherwise, I wouldn't recommend it. And then The Serpent and the Wings of Night by Carissa Broadbent. So this is super fun. I don't usually do vampire books. I think Twilight sort of scarred me off the vampire books. They've never really been my thing. But this one was really gritty, and, like, the main female character is, like, a human living in a vampire world. And so, like, it's no matter what she does, like, she's always at a disadvantage. And I just sort of loved that.
I did read this one, right?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I've read this one.
Yeah, it's so good. And the main male character, I was like, you know, I had my suspicions, but it actually played out better than I expected. Oh, so that's something that I like when a author makes a promise and then delivers on it. So that was a good one. And The North Wind by Alexandria Warwick. This is a proper enemies to lovers, like, dagger to the man parts, threatening each other. Enemies. And it's a very underrated book. I really like it. And I recommend it to a lot of people. It's really cool. And this one, Guild by Raven Kennedy. So book one's a bit more of like a prequel in a way. The series really picks up in book two, and then book three and four are excellent. I will say it did take me multiple tries to get through Guild. And this is one of the very rare occasions where it was worth it to get to the rest of the series. So yeah. And I only kept going because people like I really love on Bookstagram were like, just
keep going. Because I feel like I remember you saying like you tried to read it and you didn't like it at all. And you gave me some reasons and that was enough for me. Like, okay, I'm not interested.
Yeah. And then I ended up pushing through and reading it. And then I immediately went into books two, three, and four, I think. I think there's a fifth one that just came out, but you know, but I kind of with the series, I usually burn out. I'm like, well, that was a good ending. I'm done now. I need to know what else happens. But yeah, that one was actually worth it. And if you want something that is like quite spicy, I would say that one's pretty darn spicy. And I can't recall the spice level on the next one that I am recommending, but it's so underrated and it's so good. It's called The Winter King by C.L. Wilson. Mm. The cover makes it look like a really bad 80s bodice ripper.
Oh, no.
So I swear to God, if it got a cover upgrade, it would be
a favorite.
Like, so yeah, it would be all over Bookstagram. And it's got like weather magic and stuff. Oh, it's so cool. And it is also enemies to lovers and like kind of a grumpy female character, which you don't usually get that. Usually the male character is the grump. So I really like that one for that.
Yeah.
I actually read it in one day. I remember I was feeling crappy from my COVID vaccination the day before. And I was like, I'm just going to stay home. I'm just going to pick this. Like, this has been on my list for a while. And I read it in one day and it's not a small book. My eyes were like burning and dry when I finished. And I was like, it was worth it. So, I mean, that's probably the best review I could give it.
Yeah.
And then this next one's super fun. That Time I Got Drunk and Saved a Demon by Kimberly Levine. So this is a fun book. Like, it's hilarious. It kind of reads like contemporary fantasy with romance and it's got like a good amount of spice and like it's funny. It's a whole series. I've read some of the other ones. They're also really good, but
they nail it with the titles every time. Like from the title, I know what the vibe of the book is going to be. The title and the cover. Yeah. Like I know what genre it's going to be and I know it's going to be humorous. And I think they did really
It's absolutely hilarious. Like I remember reading it and cackling, and I was sitting on my deck reading it in the summer, and I'm pretty sure my neighbors could just hear me cackling every few minutes. And they're like, what the heck's going on over there? We're the weird neighbors, so I don't really care.
Good.
So my plot, more plot forward with less spice or no spice.
I just want to note that this list is a lot shorter.
It's a lot shorter. Okay, I had a harder time thinking of ones for this list. But again, also I couldn't remember what the spice levels were for some of the other ones. So I was like, oh, I'll stick with the ones I know for sure are safe. A River Enchanted by Rebecca Ross. So this is like Bookstagram fave. I feel like everyone read it before I did. So it was super slow to start. I actually almost DNF'd it, did not finish it. But then I ended up kind of just picking it up on like a rainy day. And then I devoured the rest of it. So it's beautiful, like beautifully written. And I really like the world building, but it is slow to start and the romance is quite slow. So just go in prepared. I would say it's more of a fantasy heavy with like romance as a subplot.
Yeah.
And then I think my favorite recommendation that she'd never recommend herself is the Nymph Keepers trilogy by Elise Volkman.
What? What?
So, I love that romance because especially in like the third book, I was squealing. I was like,
okay, that's so the happy. Best review I could give.
So, I know, it was great. I was very pleased with how it developed. And yes, so that, if you haven't already read that, I mean, it should be like a requirement for listening to the show at this point. And then my last one, which we've definitely recommended this one before, but I'll recommend it again, is An Enchantment of Ravens by Margaret Rogerson. That's a really great take on fey romance, and it's very like beautifully written, and like it's a good one. It's a solid book. You know what I mean?
I'm having a moment feeling very honored to be on the same list as An Enchantment of Ravens because I love that book so much.
As you should, because your books are amazing. So quite happy with that. I can't wait till you publish something else that I can start recommending
oh
it.
Oh my god. Again.
See, it's really hard. Like, the listeners got to know how hard it is for us, because I read Elisa's work and no one else has read it yet. So I can't,
you
like,
can't talk about it.
Yeah. And I'm like,
ditto on that.
Oh, it's kind of a problem. But anyway, that is the tea on the fantasy romance genre. So don't forget to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on Instagram and Threads at the Tea Grammys Podcast. I've pretty much abandoned Twitter or X or whatever the heck it is. So just find us on Instagram and Threads. Happy writing.